Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, I think you do such a lovely job of making this such a comfortable place for us to discuss ideas and information. So I really like that. And the questions that you ask really made me go deep into some of my upbringing, which was actually a lot of fun. And in the process, I learned something new about myself as well.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's mentor guest is Lori Healy, a recovery coach and educator in private practice. We have had some great conversations and have found a few connections before we decided to do a show together. You might remember Tim Gilk of Wood and Con last month. I'll include our podcast conversations in the episode resources, but my conversation with him was about accepting his early failure, which led to his resilient comeback with Wood and Con. And he also talked about having trusting relationships, a generational legacy of benefits. And he talked about David Wood, who was a strong mentor in his life. And Lori had recognized the business name and said her dad, Jim Con, was the second generation business partner with David Wood. So Lori forwarded the email to her dad, who's living in Alexandria, Minnesota, and her dad sent me an inviting email. So I called him, and he's going to be our guest mentor in March, so he can fill in kind of the backstory or the other part of the history before Tim Gilk came on board. I mean, I've not had this kind of a conversation before. I'm really excited to have it, and also to have a person who grew up in an entrepreneurial environment, Lori Healy, who has that kind of history in the studio today. What we're focusing on in today's conversation is what the little T's and the big T's in trauma can teach us. Because as I mentioned, she's a recovery coach and educator, and we're going to get to know her backstory a little bit and give you some further information about what has brought her into this specialty. And she's got some really special insights into trauma that I hadn't looked at in the way in which we had discussed off air. And so that's why I thought it would be beneficial for you to hear as well, because you might not have heard some of what we're talking about either, in especially the little T's in traumas. And we'll go through some definitions in a minute. But to give you a little more background, Lori Healy, like I said, is a recovery coach and educator in private practice that comes alongside anyone supporting a loved one, friend, or colleague struggling with addiction and co-occurring mental health disorders. She helps families, community allies, and workplaces navigate relationships where mental health and substance use disorders exist, using evidence-based best practices informed by CRAFT, Invitation to Change, Motivational Interviewing, and Genograms. Lori has coached hundreds of individuals to facilitate better communications, implement effective programming, and help those in recovery moving toward the restoration of relationships. So Lori's also a peer recovery specialist trained in the ARISE intervention model and group wellness coaching. Based on lived family experience with addiction and mental health disorders, Lori is a strong ally to the recovery community and has a passion for helping transition concerned others from a place of hopelessness and despair to one of empathy and hope. She has also been a personal trainer and instructor in the corporate workplace for the better part of a decade. So she seeks time in her own recovery through nature, running, hiking, camping, reading, and adventuring with her family for her restoration. So you can reach her at Lori Healy, H-E-A-L-Y. LY.com. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Nancy.
Thank you for deciding to be a guest mentor on We Mentor Mondays.
Oh, well, thanks for the invitation. I'm really glad to be here.
Good. And where in Minnesota are you?
I am in Lakeville, which is just about 20 minutes south of Minneapolis-St. Paul.
And how are you feeling right now in this moment?
I'm feeling warm, which is good since it's so cold outside right now. But it's Monday and I feel like it's the start of a new week and I'm feeling pretty good.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Well, let's just dive right into our conversation then, because there's lots to cover, as you and I have discussed privately, about trauma, and even like getting into the details of it can be overwhelming. And so in our conversation, we're not going to be overwhelming people, but we're kind of breaking down trauma in two areas, one with the little T in trauma and one with the big T. And most of us, when we think about trauma, we think about the big T's, death, any kinds of things like severe accidents. It can be military, things that people have witnessed or participated in, and all, the list goes on and on. We've all been traumatized through COVID and that experience. And so there's also these little things that have happened along the way. And we each kind of, have a different experience with it. And all these little underlying traumas can also create some cumulative trauma that needs a little time to kind of sort through. So, Lori, I was wondering if you could start our conversation by defining what trauma is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've kind of alluded to it already, Nancy. Trauma is complex and it has many, many different dimensions. So it can be difficult to understand when looking at it. So like you said, when we hear the word trauma, a lot of times we'll think of the cause of that trauma, whether it's a train accident, maybe it's a natural disaster. It could be somebody who discovers that their partner is having an affair or the death of a loved one. It really is deeply emotional and it's seen as a wound. It's a wound of the heart. It's a defeat. It's a hurt, which then ultimately causes suffering, which leaves us feeling really disconnected. And that hurt, if you think about, there's different wellness dimensions, social, spiritual, emotional, occupational. Trauma, has the ability to hurt those parts of our wellness, which cause that suffering that we walk through. But it's really, it's not a disease or a condition. It's the body and the brain's response to that painful experience, which sometimes can lead to somebody's inability to cope with the resulting feelings or thoughts that result from that trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as we were talking about trauma off air, we realized, you had mentioned there's these little T's that affect people, and especially if they're cumulative over time. We've heard you name the big traumas. What are some little T's of the trauma
that we
should be aware of?
Sure. When I was doing some research around trauma for my own coaching business, and I came across this body of work that is largely embraced by clinicians in the field and therapists that work specifically with trauma, and it was referred to as big T trauma and little T trauma, and traumas are often categorized that way based on the type of trauma. So as we talked about the big T traumas, those come from events that really anyone would find disturbing. It's sometimes due to a big singular event, such as those natural disasters or the unexpected death of a loved one. Little T traumas, those are more subtle and they're much more common than big T traumas. So sometimes then we don't realize the effect that they might be having on us. So little T traumas may include things such as bullying, experiencing high stress at school or at work. It could be losses that accumulate over time. So the loss of a job, a financial loss, even the loss of a friendship, or even something like the absence of having somebody who has empathy for you in your life. Those are little T traumas that can accumulate over time. The important thing to remember, though, is that trauma, you know, it's very complex, as I mentioned. It's highly personal. So one person's little T traumas could be one person's big T traumas.
Yeah, I can see like a financial loss that mm-hmm. could be either a small T trauma or a large T, depending upon what's at stake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because what's traumatic for me personally, big or little, is significant to me. And it's different for everybody.
Yeah, and I imagine it also plays out differently for each of mm-hmm. us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it can depend on where we're at with our life stage. It can depend on, you know, where we're at, you know, socioeconomically. There's lots of different factors that relate to how we deal with something that's traumatic for us.
Yes. And so let's kind of go a little bit deeper into it by understanding a little bit more about your background.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so what was your upbringing like? You have 4 or 6 words that would describe each caretaker that raised you?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I grew up in, family where my parents have been married and continued to be married. And I guess the way that I would explain my mother, the words that I would use would be devoted, patient, thoughtful, very creative. I would even say artistic in the way that she creates.
Like how would that show up?
So she is, I always call her, she's my Martha Stewart mom. She knits, she's a quilter, she's an amazing cook. Her home is always a beautiful, warm place to walk into. She just has this way of creating that makes you feel really welcome and really at home. And I've tried to learn those crafts from her, but I've maybe succeeded in a couple of them, but I did not get the knitting or the quilting gene. But she's just this extremely creative woman.
Mm. Okay.
I'd also describe her as very fun. She's just so much fun to be with, and has always created fun in our lives. And then compassionate.
One
of the most compassionate people that I know.
Oh my gosh, she's got kind of like all the things you would like in a mother.
Yeah. I have a very good mother.
Yeah. And how about your dad?
My dad, he is an adventurer. He is a mentor, not only to me, but to many people. He's contemplative. I would also describe him as responsible, genuine, and safe.
And what? Safe?
Safe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting word based on who he is, because he is a risk taker and he is an adventurer. But he does it in a way that maintains an element of safety, especially when others are involved. Maybe it's another way of looking out for the best interests of others and creating safe spaces for people to be in.
Wow. So a depth of emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was in your room? You're in your room, in your house growing up.
Well, yeah, I had a brother and sister. I had a brother and sister, and they were in my room, and I probably tried to kick them out a lot. I was the oldest. So as I was getting older, I wanted to maintain my privacy, but a younger brother and sister.
Okay. And what were their names?
Brian and Jackie.
Okay. And where did you grow up?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I joke with people that I'm an island girl. So I actually was born in Honolulu, Hawaii. My mother and father were there because my dad was an engineer for the U.S. Navy. And so that's where he was based. And about 3 years in, they decided that they wanted to raise their family closer to home. So they moved me, I was 3 years old at the time, from Honolulu, Hawaii to Moorhead, Minnesota. And
what a shift.
So you can just imagine. For the next decade, my brother and sister were then born there, and we lived in Moorhead, Minnesota, and then just across the river in Fargo, North Dakota for a few years as well. And then in the middle of my ninth grade year in high school, we moved to Rice Lake, Wisconsin, and that's where I went to high school and graduated from.
Okay. And so what were some of the fun and enjoyable things about growing up in your family?
Yeah. Well, you know, there was always a lot of love in our family. We spent a lot of time with our extended family during the summers at both my grandparents' places, who lived on the lake. So water was always a big deal in our family. We did a lot of sailboating. My dad is a sailor. We did a lot of water skiing, just water sports. And so we've always had really good memories of that. We were fortunate to do some travel, and you'll probably hear more about this when you talk with my father, but he is a private pilot and has been flying for over 50 years. And so we were fortunate enough to be able to take these family vacations where my father would fly us to destinations. And that really gave us a love of exploring new places, meeting new people, and how to deal with challenging circumstances. We were kind of all on our own navigating those times. This was before social media. You know, we didn't have Google Maps or anything like that. So it was always an adventure to plan one of these trips. And we have a lot of really, really fond family memories of that, of those travels.
And how have you kind of taken those adventure? Like, how does the adventure part show up in your life now?
Mm-hmm. Well, they definitely instilled a love of travel in my life, and that translated into things such as study abroad programs. Or when I was in my 20s, I would save every penny that I had for my job and take trips to faraway destinations. I love to travel to South America, so any chance I could get, I would stuff my backpack full of outdoor gear and, take to the skies and land up in a new place. And I just absolutely loved that. And we continue to do that as a family. We have a real affinity for travel. Mm-hmm. Not only throughout the world, but even in our own backyard. We love to just go, especially during this time of COVID. We've found so many amazing trails that even exist here and around the Twin Cities that were new to us. So just going out and exploring, and because you never know who you're going to meet. You never know what situation you're going to run into. And I think that, that teaches a lot of resilience too. And that's something my parents taught me, and I hope to pass it on to my own son.
Okay. You have one son?
I do. Yes.
Cool. How old is he?
He is 12.
Ah, nice adventurous age.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in every family, we have these challenges and setbacks, which are part of the little T's and big T's and trauma. Mm-hmm. So what were some of your biggest challenges that you experienced? Mm-hmm. You mentioned, it had to be kind of challenging to move from place to place and kind of reestablish yourself. Mm-hmm. And you implied mm-hmm. some, with each adventure, there's these different plans that you need to come together in order to, mm-hmm. Have a successful adventure. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I think, I can start with some of the travel adventures. There's probably so many, but, some funny stories. I remember we had been traveling for, I think, the good part of the day. And we got to this hotel, and we didn't always stay at the greatest places. My dad was pretty frugal, which was fine. That was fine. And that taught us resilience in our own ways. But we weren't staying at the beautiful resorts with the nice pools. And, we were sometimes at the hotel motels. And anyway, so here my parents were, we had traveled all day long, three kids, we had a lot of energy. So remember, we got to this hotel. And I think my brother and sister and I kind of started jumping on the bed because, you can't jump on the bed at home. You can jump on the bed at the hotel though, right? Well, again, a hotel motel. So the doors open, which opens out to the parking lot. And the manager happened to be walking by, was very unhappy about that. I think asked my parents to have us stop jumping. We didn't. And we got kicked out of the hotel. We were asked to leave. We were asked to leave. And so I think we packed up. We figured it out. But just things like that. Or we would fly into this is kind of an interesting one. We flew into Mexico actually. And I was about 12 at the time, and I had been taking Spanish in middle school, and I was the only one in my family that spoke Spanish, and I was still learning it, so it wasn't perfect by any means. And we landed at this tiny little airport just across the border, and we were getting out, and when we landed, and this was back in the 80s, so there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in Mexico at that time, and we landed, and there were two Mexican men standing there with machine guns and machetes. So my father was, he shut down the airplane. He turned around. He said, "Honey, why don't you go talk to him? Just let him know we're here. We're just going to be stopping to get some fuel, and then we're going to keep going." Okay. So, but that's what I did. I had to get out of the plane and go up to these two men that were heavily armed and just explain we're this, family from Minnesota, flying down to Puerto Escondido, Mexico, and just here for a fueling stop. So, it was things like that that we had no plan for, situations that we would just walk into and figure them out. And I think one of the things I always learned through these kind of weird situations is that it always worked out. Mm-hmm. And perhaps it was just a combination of, of luck and goodwill on other people's parts. But it was just one of those things that you can't always have a plan for everything, and you do the best with what you can in that moment.
Well, and your dad must have felt comfortable with them, like they weren't going to shoot you.
I guess so. It was funny. I was having this conversation with him not too long ago, and I said, weren't you worried about this? Or you think now about the day and age that we're living in, but weren't you worried about that, Al? And he just... No, he always had when I say safe, he always was very safe about, planning our routes and knowing where we were going to go. But there's just some certain things you just couldn't plan for.
You must have trusted his decision making.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel very, I did.
How old were you at the time?
This day. I was about 12 or 13 years old. Cause I remember I was in middle school.
Oh, the age of your son.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So those are kind of some fun challenges in the experience of travel and adventure. I think some of the other things, we did have to move in the middle of my ninth grade of high school. And that at the time felt very traumatic to me. I was leaving
was
all
from
of my friends.
Moorhead to Rice Lake?
Fargo to Rice Lake. Yes.
Fargo. Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So all of my, good friends, I had established friendships. Yeah. We were moving to Rice Lake, and I knew Rice Lake because that's where my grandparents are from. So my mother's family is from Wisconsin. So I only knew Rice Lake as this small town where we would go to for holidays and to see my cousins. And so moving there to, a new city, new school, new group of friends was really hard. And for about that first 5 or 6 months, I felt really lost, and I felt really, really alone. It was really hard. And of course, eventually I formed a new group of friends. And now today those friends are some of the strongest friendships that I have in my life. So in retrospect, it all worked out. But that was very hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you describe that as a big T or little T?
I would say at the time for me, that felt like a big T trauma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just in terms of moving and relocating to a place that, I knew a little bit, but didn't really know anybody other than my family.
Yeah.
So
how did your life kind of take shape? Did you stay in Rice Lake for a period of time after high school, or what happened after that?
So I graduated from Rice Lake High School, and then summer came and said goodbye to all our friends. And then I went to school at St. Herbert College, just outside of Green Bay, which is in De Pere, Wisconsin. And I went there to study communications and a minor in Spanish.
Hmm. Do you use your Spanish now at all?
A little bit, not as much as I used to. But when I did do a study abroad when I was in college, which was very helpful. And then following that, I actually got a job right out of school for Oshkosh B'gosh. They make the children's clothing.
Oh, yeah.
And I was responsible for customer service and account management. And I worked with a lot of Latin American accounts. And so that was great fun to be able to use my Spanish. And as I mentioned then, every chance that I had to travel abroad, I would pick a location in Central or South America. So I just really tried to keep it up from a personal standpoint. Yeah. And, you know, have also looked for volunteer opportunities throughout the community over the years in order to be able to put that Spanish to use as well.
Hmm. Tell us a little bit more about how your life took shape after college. Did you go into corporate America, or did you follow your dad's entrepreneurial path and look for your own business?
Yeah, I went right into corporate America. I was so excited. I mean, this was the early 90s, and this is when you still wore suits into the office, and, you know, I had my cubicle. So, like, I was excited. Like, I had got this job shortly after I had graduated, and I was ready to go, and just had an amazing experience there for about 4 years. It was I was traveling internationally with my job, which was just a dream. I mean, I was 22, 23 years old, and being exposed to some really great, just really great learnings. I had a great boss. So I had a very positive experience right out of college. And kind of came to a realization, though. I was, you know, in my mid-20s, I was living in Oshkosh, which was either a college town or a family town. It didn't seem like it was a great place for singles. And I guess I had this itch that I wanted to go do something different. So I found a new job here in Minneapolis at Aveda Corporation, another big corporation, and was involved in the international division there. So that is where I went after that and continued to build on my career, which was largely taking shape at that point in international marketing and marketing in general. And then over that period of time was actually when Aveda was acquired by Estee Lauder. And there were a number of positions in the company that were either given a decision to move to New York because they were being, relocated, or take a severance package and go do something else. And there's, of course, a story within that. But my ultimate decision was to take the severance package. I was ready for something new. And there was something in me that was also wanting smaller. I felt, you know, I'd spent about 8 years in the corporate environment, taught me just some amazing things. I was able to grow my network, but I just wanted something smaller. And through networking and talking to people, I found out that there was something out there called a startup, and that I could go and help this company grow. And I really didn't know too much, but I met the founder at the time. It was a startup that was growing out of the University of Minnesota. And we sat down and talked, and we had a great connection. Like, I felt really comfortable with him, and had some skills that would be helpful to him. And I remember him saying, you know, you'd be the second employee, and I have this team of developers that'll all soon come on board after they graduate. But I just need somebody who can kind of come and help me set up the office. And, you know, once we get that established, we'll move you back more into your area of marketing, and I'm sure there'll be plenty to do. So I thought, well, this sounds like fun. So as a technology startup, I knew absolutely nothing about technology, but I knew I was flexible. I knew I was resilient. I knew I could bring some organizational skills to the company, which is what they needed at that point. And that's what I did. And that's where I fell in love with the startup and entrepreneurial environment. And then really for the next 20 years, I spent a good majority of my time working in startup and entrepreneurial environments.
So did you then develop your own consultancy, or how long did you stay with this tech company?
Yeah, I was at that tech company about 4 years, and then I went to another startup after that for about another 6 years, where I grew the marketing division of that company, went to another startup after that. So I did three startups before I launched my own consultancy, which I did for about 4 years, working with primarily startups and small business owners.
And what made you decide to go back into corporate America after 4 years?
Yeah, so I was, I had a young son at the time. He was about 5 years old.
Path, you met your husband?
Oh, yes, I did. So my husband and I met while I was working at that, that first startup, actually, we met.
Oh.
Yeah. And he's also in technology. So we had that common connection, but we met through a mutual friend and at a barbecue. And
what's his name?
Oh, his name is Tom.
Tom. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just trying to fill in, you know, a visual of, you know, your your connection there in what you're describing. Yeah. So you were at the barbecue?
Yep. We were at the barbecue and we had this immediate connection. Come to find out, he also had a love of water sports. He's a big water skier, big fisherman. And so we naturally had lots and lots to discuss about those activities that we both enjoyed.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then your son came a few years later.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Tom and I took advantage of not having any kids yet, and we decided we wanted to travel. So we went on some amazing experiences ourselves and climbed Kilimanjaro in Africa and hiked Machu Picchu. We needed to get some of those bucket list items off of our list before we knew that we wanted to start a family.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah. So we've scaled back a little bit in the type of adventure, especially in the risk area. Maybe as our son gets older, he'll want to start doing those things with us. But then who knows how much risk I'll have left in me. We'll see. some of those mountain climbs can be a little bit harrowing, but my goodness, it's an amazing way to experience Mother Nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Well, that probably helped you with those adventures, just kind of prepare a little bit for the ins and outs of motherhood.
Yes, I think so. There's definitely a lot of things we can learn from travel, can't we?
Yeah. You went back into corporate America after your 4 years of developing your own business because you wanted to be, you had your son. And so what's your son's name?
My son is Owen. His name is Owen.
Okay.
And a couple of things, I wouldn't quite define it as corporate America. The company itself actually was considered a startup in many ways. It was a co-working organization provided, you know, space, not just space, but resources and mentorship to budding entrepreneurs and people that were growing new businesses. So it was a really innovative and exciting place to be. It was a membership-based organization. And so
the name of it?
It started off as Coco Co-working, and then over time it rebranded to Field Collective. And, you know, the main reason I went back is there was something stirring in my soul when I was doing my consulting. I really liked the work. It was interesting to me, and I was working with some really smart people, and it gave me the flexibility that I needed, that was important at that time with my son. But there was something in me that just said, you know, Lori, I think you're not exactly happy doing what you're doing. And I wasn't quite sure at the time why, but I did some work around that, and I realized that I was suffering a little bit from disconnection. I was, you know, in my home office by myself. A lot of my clients were actually based out of San Francisco. So I got used to doing remote work quite a while ago, but realized that I missed having that team of people. And at that point in my life, that was just something that I needed. And I honestly had found what I thought was the perfect position for me. It had blended my marketing expertise, my love of growing and helping startup companies evolve, and a team of really dynamic people. Plus, it had amazing flexibility. So I was able to use that to my personal advantage as well, as I was raising a young son alongside my husband, who also had a very demanding job. So it ended up that was, you know, working out really well for me, and I absolutely loved it. I think it's, you know, I had some amazing career experiences early on traveling internationally, but I have to say that the work that I was doing for this company and the network I was able to build and just the people that I met day in, day out building companies and working on really interesting ideas was absolutely inspiring. I loved it.
Yeah, I can imagine. Something also kind of took turn in your life where you decided to develop a private practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
describe
definitely.
A little bit about what happened with your brother, Brian.
Sure. So, you know, while I was busy working to build my career, and, you know, that was something that was always something that was important to me, to be working on a professional advancement for me. Within our family, we were struggling with the disease of addiction. Mm-hmm. And this was something that, you know, my brother was faced with when he was younger, and this followed him into his adult life as well. And so that was something that as a family, we really stepped through in silence, I would say. It was a really, you know, that in and of itself was traumatic, many years to step through that, not really knowing how do we deal with this? How do we help him? How do we help ourselves as a family? And in 2017, we lost him to his substance use disorder. And that was obviously a very a big T trauma for me. And, you know, something that is still something that, you know, I think when you lose somebody like that in your life, it's something that you are always kind of grieving over at different times in your life.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. How old was he?
He was 42.
Okay. So I'm still too young, right?
Yeah, too young. And, yeah. You know, just he was an amazing, amazing chef and an amazing baker. And this was actually something that I forgot to mention. We were talking about growing up in our family. My mother is an amazing cook. And she instilled this love of cooking and baking in all three of us. I would say my brother and sister are way better cooks and chefs than I am. but he was a chocolatier. He had this amazing chocolate business and just was very skilled and really, really good at what he did. So yes, much too young, much too young.
Yeah. And so your family kind of changed it. How did you kind of deal with his passing?
Mm-hmm. You know, for me personally, obviously there was the trauma, there was the grief working through that. But one of the things that kept bothering me was the question of how did we get here? Like how did this happen? You know, the disease of addiction is insidious. And I just thought, okay, let me try and break this down. You know, we live in a state which has amazing recovery resources, access to some really great treatment centers, professionals, obviously, which we were able to tap into as a family. You know, we knew how to navigate resources. We knew where to go for resources. We were educated, and we still found ourselves really lost within this disease of addiction as a family. And I thought, you know, it shouldn't have to be this way. And so I think as part of my grieving process, I really dove into that. And I really wanted to understand how could families better navigate this rather than have to walk through this in silence. And so I just started getting involved in the local community to see what was happening in the recovery community, met some really amazing people, and also realized there are really great resources out there, but it can be difficult to navigate them, especially when you're dealing with crisis situations or operating from a place of denial and shame, which largely covers a lot of a lot of mental health disorders, including addiction. And so what I had this moment as I was, you know, kind of doing this work and walking through this, that as I started to share my story, which I had largely kept hidden for, you know, 20 years, I realized that it was also helpful to other people that were stepping through this. And I enjoyed talking about it. I enjoyed being able to connect the dots. And that's something I think I always did really well when I was, you know, in my marketing career, was to bring resources and connections to people that were trying to grow their businesses. You know, I always enjoyed saying, you need to meet this person, or you need to check out this program, or let me introduce you to them, because it would help them grow or shape their business in some way. So I feel like I've been able to take those skills and apply this to the area of recovery. And that, coupled with my lived experience, which just when you walk through something like this, anybody who's walked through something difficult can immediately relate to somebody else who's challenged with something like that. So that lived family experience, even, you know, plus my business acumen, really then opened up all these new ways of thinking about how I could use my experience to help other families. And that's what led me to launch my recovery and coaching business.
Well, and I would like to highlight your, you've talked like throughout our conversation about, you've sprinkled in the resiliency, and it sounds like you implemented kind of the four elements of shame resiliency that is talked about in positive psychology, and Brené Brown has focused a tremendous amount on it too, is recognizing shame and understanding shame triggers, which means asking those deeper questions. You know, how did we get here? Practicing critical awareness of yourself, your environment, and the way things work. And so as you were developing your critical awareness around addiction, it sounds like you started reaching out to others and sharing yourself and your stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you started speaking more about shame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, definitely.
Which is what you're doing kind of a lot. And you realize, oh, I kind of like talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do. I think it's really helpful. Yeah, there were, you know, a couple of things that came to be through that. I obviously went back to work, which at the time was my work with Coco at the co-working facility. And that's how I knew Anila, who you recently interviewed for one of your segments, which is how we connected, which is, again, another wonderful connection. And I remember we were sitting in one of the working spaces at Coco, and I had just recently lost my brother, and we were just talking about that and talking about you know, how we need to bring our full selves to the workplace, but yet here we're carrying all of this weight, whatever that may be. Maybe there's, you know, there's a tough situation at home, or there's stress in the workplace, or our child is walking through a difficult situation, whatever it is, we have all of this weight, but we don't feel like we can talk about it in the workplace. And we thought, that's not right. Like, we have to change that. And because we were sitting, both had a shared affinity for wanting to do that, and also we were involved with the tech space in Minneapolis, St. Paul. The co-working facility that I worked for had a lot of tech and entrepreneurial companies in it. And we thought, let's just start talking about this. And our entrepreneurial community here in the Twin Cities is amazing too, because there's all sorts of different events and conferences where basically if you're willing to show up and share your knowledge, you can. And
yeah.
So Anila and I and another individual by the name of Patrick Parker, who's a psychologist, said, let's talk about this. Let's talk about mental health in the workplace. And so we went to an event. It's called Mini Bar here, which is kind of like an open conference where you can submit to speak on any topic that you want. And we did this event. It was called Speaking Up About Being Down. And it was very lo-fi. We just had, you know, a number of people in the room, probably about 25 people. So not a lot, but, you know, this was also, based on what we were talking about, it was a very vulnerable space to show up. And so one of the things that we did is we just wanted to create a safe space for people to talk about this. And what we wanted to do is we actually wanted to get information from the people that were showing up, because we just said, hey, we think it's important to be talking about these topics. And what we want to do is in the future, we want to have more of these and then bring in additional people that can talk about these topics real in depth. So what we did is we put these really large post-it, those big white post-it notes up on the wall. And we had a bunch of Sharpie markers and the little post-it notes. And we put certain phrases up on these post-its. And then we invited people to come up and share to the extent that they were comfortable by just writing down on one of those little post-its and then posting it up on the wall. And so can I share a couple examples with you in terms of some of the questions we asked?
Yeah,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
So one was in the workplace, I would like to see the following mental health and wellness topics addressed. Here's are some of the things that people wrote down. Stress and burnout, setting boundaries, insane pace of work, overtime, psychological safety, and healthy habits and exercise rewarded. That was one topic.
Wow.
Another one that we put was, I personally struggle with. People came up and wrote self-doubt, anxiety, worthiness, stress, imposter syndrome, addiction, telling people I need help, burnout, and fear.
Hmm.
You know, and I'll just put one more out here.
Yeah.
I feel like these are barriers to my mental health care. Workplace expectations, overwork, being more junior than those around me, lack of PTO for mental health appointments and breaks, knowing what's covered under my insurance, and a safe peer-to-peer environment.
Wow.
Yeah. And after this event was over, you know, we just sat there and looked at each other and really didn't know what to say, because there was some real pain being expressed on these post-it notes, and people that were hurting, and people that were expressing how they felt personally and within the workplace. And so that was just, you know, further evidence to us that more and more of this needs to happen in terms of how are we opening up these conversations. And, you know, I go back to the fact that, you know, there were 25 people in the room. There probably easily could have been 75 or 100 or 200. These were individuals that were, I believe, you know, exhibiting true vulnerability. The vulnerability it takes to show up in a room like that and then share these things, not even anonymously. It was a really respectful environment, though. You know, nobody was peeking over their shoulders to see what was written down. But it was also a very safe place, because we were all connected by the fact that it was really, really important to be talking about these things as it relates to mental health in the workplace. So that's an example of some of the things that I've been working over the past years on in the workplace, and how do we open up more conversations about this in the workplace.
Okay, great. Well, before we leave our conversation, because we're going to have a second conversation about having real conversations in the workplace. So you kind of queued up our discussion, because there's real issues that people need to be talking about. And it's intensified over last year in 2020. And so it's a great opportunity to set up a different type of work structure where real conversations can happen. But it's important to set it up in a way that's constructive, and also that people, like you're talking about, having an emotionally safe environment. And we'll get into the details of that. But I was wondering if you wanted to share anything else about, there's a lot, but we just wanted to kind of tap into a little bit about the little T's and the big T's. So giving a definition of the big T's and the little T's, and then also any tips that you have for business owners, giving them tips of how to address some of the little T's and big T's that they are finding in the workplace.
So I think just to you to comment on that, it's all going to start with awareness. Awareness of even where are we coming from personally? What is it that we're carrying and bringing into the workplace as a business owner? What does that stress look like for us at home? What does it look like in the workplace? So, you know, being aware of what our way of being looks like and how to show up for that is important.
So and starting then, with yourself and
with
acknowledging,
yourself.
Yeah, where am I at with all of this? How am I feeling about what's going on? What are my concerns right now in this moment?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Because people are looking to you as a business owner as to be that role model.
Absolutely.
To be setting examples in the workplace that are healthy.
Well, and I think the reason you go through this process, it's to understand yourself better and to make sure that you're meeting your own needs. It's also important for you to process some of these pieces, especially when there's collective trauma in the workplace, like we've all been adjusting to different ways in which we've been working in COVID-19. And so, and through this whole pandemic that's lasting, you know, continues through this year. So with all those adjustments, if you're in tune with your own emotional health and can be present with yourself and aware, you also then are training yourself to be sensitive to other people. And then you can help get ahead of where colleagues are and who you're employing, or if you've got part-time workers or those contract working with you, you can help them with processing some of the experiences that they're having by just simple conversations, right?
Exactly. And again, we're not here, you know, as business owners, we don't have to be worried about taking on that huge responsibility of addressing people's trauma. Like that's where therapists come in and counselors come in. But if we can be a leader that leads with empathy and vulnerability to even start the discussions when we see somebody that maybe their behavior is off a little bit or they're not acting themselves. What we can do as effective leaders is to look beyond that behavior and say, why is that happening? And being curious about what might be driving that. So instead of, you know, somebody showing up constantly late, instead of thinking, well, they're just not cut out for this job, it's to really dive behind that to say, you know, why is he or she always showing up late? What's going on there? And then how can I address this and create a safe space for that conversation in order to maybe be the liaison that helps somebody get the help they need?
Excellent. All right. And we'll go into some more details about this too, because when we're in a culture that's all of us have been shamed and all of us have been traumatized outside of ourselves, but collectively we experience it differently and it's very subtle and sometimes it's not, but it's all affected our behavior. It's affected the energy level that we're bringing into the workplace or the lack of. Based on, you know, how difficult things have been getting, it's felt like we've been walking through, you know, a huge swamp, a never-ending swamp where we can't see the end. And so there's different, you know, our energy has fluctuated. So we'll go into a few more details. And I love talking with you, Lori. I think you're really great to have real conversations with. And we'll explore that in our next conversation. I want to thank you so much for being here and for taking the time to talk about the little T's and the bigger T's of trauma.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Yes, and I've enjoyed it as well.
Okay, good. And thank you, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in today and for taking from the conversation whatever gems fit in your life right now. Have a great week. I'll have some steps for you to do in the self-care area of this podcast in notes, and I'll see you next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. We've been doing this kind of work since 1992, helping small business owners and emerging entrepreneurial leaders with self-leadership mastery, business ownership success, and that leads to life success. We focus on the dual innovation journey of reinventing yourself as you redesign your business. We do this with one-on-one strategic mentoring sessions. We have several types of labs that you can participate in with your other peers. Both our entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab, which you can really get into the crux of how to run your business more effectively and become more competent. We have meaningful conversations that help with developing a culture that will work for you. I do weekly meditation and yoga that you can participate in to evolve yourself as you redesign your business. You can also sponsor this podcast. We're always looking for people to support our programming, build out our programming with us, and I especially love promoting you. You can get involved in all those different areas because when we mentor, you design a better life, a more fulfilling future as an entrepreneurial leader slash innovator, as a competent business owner slash practitioner, as a mentor slash role model, and as a human being and master of self. Every client starts with a desire to shift something, clarify something, overcome challenges, grow profitability. We started with one entrepreneur. We've mentored thousands. We're ready to work with you. When you show up, we're here. So to get started, go to wementor.com. You can also call me at 612-804-8920, or you can reach me through email, nancy@wementor.com. Get ready and take the next step today.